When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mock Draft 2.0 here on The Call Up. I'm Aram Layton. He's Jack McMullen. And as you're going to see, this draft is totally different than 1.0. And I can promise you 3.0 is probably going to be a lot different than 2.0. But I feel like we're inching closer to getting an idea of how things are going to shake out. I think there's a lot more clarity, obviously, since the last time we did this, because we did it leading into the college baseball season. A lot of things have happened this college baseball season, and we've been able to kind of adjust as such. I think that there's some things that have been big surprises. There's been some things that we were cautiously optimistic about. And then, of course, the negative, some players that have fallen a little bit that we'll try to remember to highlight. We're going to pop the mock draft up on the screen for those that are watching on YouTube. If you are listening on audio, the link is in the episode description if you want to follow along. And we're going to kind of fly around as much as we can. It's not a ton of structure to it. We just want to talk about as many of the players as we want to talk about and can get to in this episode. But Jack, what would you say is the biggest change or tangible difference in this mock draft versus the last one? Not expecting you to have, like, you know, a photographic memory of the last one, but there has been plenty of shakeup when you have a pretty decent amount of college baseball games being played.
Yeah, I think the easiest one is one became eight, like the number one overall pick, and 1.0 became the number eight overall pick in 2.0. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is not really an indictment on him. He wasn't available while everybody else was balling out. So I really enjoy that. There wasn't much movement on the pitcher front, like, you know, the two best college arms in America we were expecting, you know, to be good are really good. And guess what? They're both top 10 picks right now. I would say the guy that you've got mocked at seven has adjusted maybe the way that everybody is looking at him right now, because he's been too great to ignore. And then you got a new number one overall pick. So, like, those are probably the big things that jump out. But certainly one becoming eight is numero uno.
Fair enough. And I'm going to pop it up on the screen now, and we're going to go from number one backwards. But before I get into the number one pick, I do want to talk about a couple guys that fell out too. Some safe arms, some just safe players that we thought, you know, could definitely be surefire first round picks. Some will still potentially be able to play their way back into the conversation. But the first name that kind of comes to my mind, just from the conversation that we had preseason, Jack, is Josh Hartle, a Wake Forest lefty who was seen by most as, you know, this high floor, high probability, big league arm that is just going to carve through his collegiate competition with, you know, several different pitches and sequence well and just be more advanced than everybody. And unfortunately for Hartle, it just hasn't been the case. He's been better over his last handful of starts, and, you know, he's still going to be a relatively early draft pick, but the fastball velocity, you know, has not really ticked up. If anything, it's kind of stayed the same or waned a little bit, and there just has not been enough of the avoiding barrels and things like that up until the last handful of starts. The positive trend is good. I just don't know if there's going to be enough for a team to ultimately take him in the first round. That was a guy that we did have mocked, you know, in the middle to later part of the first round. But it seems like now Hartle, with just the louder contact and, you know, the stuff just not really ticking up at all, probably a guy that's a second or third round piece that we could be talking about a year from now saying, hey, his stock slipped, he was a first round consideration, and then the stuff jumped professionally, blah, blah, blah. But right now, it seems like he's kind of pitched his way out of the first round.
Yeah, I mean, my question is, where do the punch outs go? And it could be from that subdued fastball, but I mean, like, the command is, almost the same as it was last year. I guess the walk rate is slightly elevated. He was elite last year. He was punching out like 12 and a half per nine, and he walked 24 and 102 and a thirds.
Yeah.
Now he's walked 17 and 50 and two thirds, but he's dealing with more base runners at this point because the batting average against is higher and all that. So, like, I wonder, is it just a subdued Arsenal across the board and you're missing over the heart of the plate? Like, how does a guy that was punching out 12 and a half per nine last year fall under 10 in his draft year? I'm not sure.
I think it's mostly command, because even if it's not fully embodied in the walk rate, if you look at some of the locations and strike rate in general, yeah. I think, you know, this is a guy that gets ground balls and weak contact. I know he was punching guys out last year, but to your point, the thing that always was in his back pocket was he's a ground ball away from getting out of an inning. And I think a lot of times now he's not getting those weaker ground balls. And then also, if you're putting guys on with nobody out, you're walking guys and you're giving up a little bit more allowed contact. I mean, these collegiate defenders, I know Wake Forest is a super talented team, but you know, you're not going to be able to get away with as much when there's traffic on base. So, you know, ground balls when there's free passes being given out a little bit more, or singles before that, they might not always be the double play. They're going to sneak through. And so I think it's a little bit of just not hitting his spots, a little bit of walking some guys more. And that changeup hasn't really been there for him. So something to monitor. He's throwing better, but it looks like he may have played his way out of the first round. PJ Morlando is another guy. I can't call it as something specific that he has done or hasn't done, because I'm not watching PJ Morlando. He's a high school prospect, you know, that I love the bat, I love the swing, but all of the feedback I continue to get is that his stock is sinking. Ironically, he played the other day, I think had a series, and he was intentionally walked 7 consecutive times, which has to be so frustrating. Also, pretty lame. Like, I understand you're trying to win ball games. If you're playing in like the state championship, I guess I get it. But if it's regular season high school, just pitch to the kid. Even if he's going to hit a home run, just like pitch to the kid. Maybe walk him once or twice in certain spots, but automatic walk 7 times in a row, whoever the coach was on the other team, very lame. Not really with that. But I think Morlando, it could just be smoke. It could be a little bit of just fatigue. There's a guy that we've been talking about forever. Just one of those high school guys that has been, you know, a popular name for a while. I love the swing, but I can understand the positional limitations, you know, having him fall a little bit because of the pressure on the bat. And it's kind of the same story with Tommy White, who we will get to in the end because he is still mocked in the first round. So we'll just jump right into the 1-1 conversation here, Jack, which we figure, I mean, I won't speak for you, but it seems like it could go anyway. And my rationale here, and just so people know, this mock draft is not just these are the best players in order. You know, we'll do a big board as the draft gets closer, but it's a little bit on, you know, team tendencies, anything that I'm possibly able to hear if I'm able to reach out and, you know, get some intel. And then on top of that, you know, just what we think could happen as the rest of the season continues, you know, based on the trends that we're seeing, both from a team drafting perspective and from the player that we have going in that spot. You know, if he continues to perform the way that we think he can, might be a slam dunk at number one. And that's why I have Charlie Condon at number one. I think from a draft model perspective, he's going to check some boxes that I think don't get checked very often. Yeah, I know I don't have the exact numbers. Joe Doyle, who does a great job covering the draft, put out, you know, the batted ball data across the board, comparing Condon to, you know, some of the top dogs from last year and Dylan Cruz and even Wyatt Langford. And, you know, he had them beaten in several areas. Doesn't come with as much defensive utility, especially as Cruz and things like that. But, you know, I think there's going to be some offensive markers that he hits that it might make it really hard for teams, you know, or specifically here, the Guardians, to pass on at number one. And then something that I kind of talked about on the Just Baseball show was, you know, the Guardians' philosophy has adjusted a little bit. I think they're still going to love those contact-oriented middle infield types. And Travis Bezzana is that with added power and looks like a potential star. But I do think that the Guardians are, you know, trying to lean into a little bit more of that high upside power. And that's something that they've wanted in that organization. And if you're seeing these two guys as equals, and I think they're pretty darn close, I can see why the Guardians would lean Condon, who puts up comparable contact rates somehow, and obviously has way more power upside, even though Bezzana has done some amazing things to tap into more power. The last thing I'll say on it too is that, you know, I just don't see this guy really slowing down. And the defensive thing is a conversation, but it's not like Bezzana's playing shortstop. Yes, he's a good runner. Maybe you could put him in center field. That's a hope. But it's not like he's extremely valuable defensively either. And that's why I think when you look at the bats, Condon might be the guy at number one.
So I know you fielded a couple of draft strategy questions with Peter on the Just Baseball show, but I want to throw you a different one. And it's a theory that I've got that has really blossomed over, I think, the last 2 years. With how good college baseball players are now, college baseball players, high school guys, like I'm just taking the best one and I'm not looking at the big league roster. But with college hitters that have proven as advanced as Charlie Condon is, with college arms as well. And like we've seen some of the most seasoned, what seems like veteran, you know, pitchers that we've seen come out of college in quite some time in the last like 2-3 years. Do you think teams are starting to account for big league fit in their draft strategy of college players at the top of the draft? And the other point that I want to bring up on that front is, if you see a guy as part of your future at the major league level, chances are you are approaching him with a pre-arbitration or arbitration extension offer. So I think now more than ever before, teams know what their roster is going to look like 7 years down the road, 6 years down the road. And it like this new level of college hitter, I mean, I'm thinking about Wyatt Langford, who cracked the opening day roster, but I'm also thinking about a guy like Dylan Cruz, where even though he's gotten off to a slow start in his pro career, we're talking about a guy that the Nats hopefully have up there in September. Yeah. And then even a guy like Matt Shaw could be a Chicago Cub by August, and he's looking the part in AA right now. So I am curious, like, do you think big league fit is going to be a real thing in the top 10 when you're taking a college guy?
I think more than ever now, for one, the reason that you said, which is, you know, the fact that these guys are getting up so quick that it would be silly to disregard that. It used to be a thing where, you know, of course, you just want to focus on the best player available, and you figure it's baseball. Like, you're going to have a spot for him and you want to get the best player in a vacuum. That's the key. But if you have guys that are right there and very comparable, I definitely think that it's silly to pretend that need is going to be totally disregarded when these players are climbing up so quickly. The other side is, I've always thought that we don't draft on need at all has been played up by teams to a degree, because think about it. If I'm a team, if I'm a general manager, I don't want you to think I'm drafting on need, because you could look at my 40-man roster, you can look at my farm system, and you could have an idea of who I may be selecting. So if I'm saying, oh yeah, you know, we're going to lean into what we need, you're going to have a little bit of an idea now as another general manager as to like what I may be doing. I do believe that teams ultimately take the best player available most of the time. But I also think that they play up that, you know, approach because you don't want to tip your hand. The other side is, now you have teams climbing or players climbing faster than ever in the minor leagues. And you have better teams now mixed into the top of the draft, which is even more so going to be a need-based situation, because if I'm the worst team in Major League Baseball, if the Chicago White Sox have the number one pick, you're not drafting on need. You're taking the best player because you stink. And that's the way that it's always been in baseball, because it's the worst team drafts first or second or third or fourth. And around that range, you're taking the best player because you're probably in a bad spot as a franchise. The Guardians are a playoff team right now. The Reds could very easily be a playoff team. Those are the top two teams that are drafting here. Are the Angels going to sit here and tell you that they don't draft based on what they think they need? They get those guys up in the big leagues in 2 months. So, no, I absolutely agree that it's something that has shifted, and I think it will continue to shift a little bit. I don't think it'll ever be a full-fledged NFL, you know, NBA type of thing where it's so obvious, oh, they need this, they're going to do that. Of course not. We're going to see all the time. No one understood why the Giants took Patrick Bailey when they had Joey Bart. Now I think we can understand why. There's a lot of other instances where we can talk about those types of things. But we also know that the Rockies always need pitching. They're probably always going to take pitching. So there's a balance of the tendencies and then also the needs. And I think sometimes those things overlap too.
And a team like Cleveland, man, I mean, Andrés Giménez finishes year two in the big leagues. They give him a 7-year deal. He's under team control through 2030. So if you've got a guy on a 7-year deal that he signed pre-arb, knowing that he's going to be 31 when his club option kicks in, why would you take a guy at that exact position, knowing that that guy that you take is probably going to need to be there, and then you move Giménez to a place that, frankly, you didn't pay him $100 million to play? So I think Condon makes perfect sense here. Yes, because he's leading the country with a 477 clip. Yes, because he's leading the country in homers. I was hoping he was going to contend for the college triple crown, but frankly, like, there are not enough guys on base for him at Georgia this year to get the RBI total where it needs to be. I think Braden Montgomery is leading college baseball in RBIs right now. And we're going to get to Braden Montgomery in a moment here. But like, yes, he's the best hitter in America right now. But you also look at Cleveland. What do they got going on in the corner outfield? Stephen Kwan's awesome. Stephen Kwan and Charlie Condon are so different power profile wise. Kwan might hit four. Condon might hit 40. Yep. Like, that's the thing, man. They could be looking at Nolan Jones and Will Benson and Junior Caminero and Yiner Diaz saying, we traded away four 25 homer guys in the major leagues.
Yeah.
Let's not screw this up.
And the beautiful thing is, like, they have had that, you know, adverse feeling or reaction to players that come with whiff. The power, you know, is undermined by whiff. Condon's got a feel to hit, man, like that. It's good contact rates. And I think it's stuff that's going to translate and a good approach. So that, to me, he kind of is the perfect fit for them, and a totally different player and swing. But like, when you see what DeLauder does, where it's the feel to hit is way better than you'd expect for a guy that's that big and powerful. They love DeLauder. I think they're going to love Condon, even if he doesn't come with as much, you know, speed and defensive utility, though. I will say the defense has been better. And also, the way that they're, last thing I'll say is the way that their team's set up, you know, the guy that they take at one, for him to have an opportunity to crack that big league roster, given the infield situation and, you know, just kind of where they're at, the guy's going to have to really rake, or they would have had to move Jimenez over to short and then Bizzano would play second. Who knows? But regardless, they'd have to really rake for them to do that. And there's a direct path to Condon just being in a corner or being a DH for them, which they can use. This is a team that was, again, I always say it, but took Davison de los Santos in the Rule 5, which was one of the biggest head scratchers to us, just because they are so keen on adding power to the equation and getting a little bit away from just the all contact middle infield slap it around type that we know they're trying to diversify a little bit.
Yeah.
With that notion though, dude, like, Reds get blessed here at number two. And this is where we got Travis Bizzano going to the Reds at two. They have a million middle infielders, period. This is, you'd take the best freaking player available.
Yes.
That's it. Point blank, period. You could go with an arm, sure. Chase Burns would be a lot of fun. With the way pitching goes nowadays, man, you have a surefire above average big leaguer in Bizzano and probably a frequent all-star. And I'm imagining, so this guy goes, we knew that the field of hit was insane. He was playing professionally in Australia when he was like 16. The field of hit's always been there. Then he adds the power this year. The exit velocity skyrocket, and he's hitting bomb after bomb after bomb, leadoff homers. The fact that he's able to just tap into this much more power without, you know, taking away from the phenomenal field of hit jack is like, that's everything you want to see. And you imagine putting this player in Great American Ballpark, it's going to be crazy when you see like the power uptick there. He could actually have some stupid numbers. He might put up numbers that could be better than Condon out of the gate just because of the park. I think it's so conducive to him, given that the power is now above average, but the contacts plus, and above average power and Great American can play like plus from an output perspective. I don't care how many infielders they have. Bizzano is a better prospect than Noelvi Marte before the, you know, suspension. He's going to immediately be way more exciting and a bigger impact for them than Edwin Arroyo, who, you know, if he didn't get hurt, would definitely have been a top 100 guy as well, or right in there. But it just doesn't matter. This is just an instance here where it's best player available. You don't think twice.
Dude, I mean, he is what, he's fifth in college baseball in batting average right now. He's hitting .430. He's second in America in walks. Only guy ahead of him is a kid at Troy. And like, if you're playing at Troy and you're the best hitter on the team, like, you're going to get walked a lot, surely. So he leads high major college baseball in walks drawn. And oh, by the way, he's got 19 homers at this point as we chat on Friday afternoon. The 19 homers is the craziest thing. And I was thinking initially when I saw this, oh, it'll be like Jonathan India's rookie of the year. No, way less whiff, way more plate discipline, and frankly, more power. This guy at Great American Ballpark has transformed the conversation around him from, oh, he could hit 20 to 25 at Great American Ballpark, to, oh, he could hit 30 at Great American Ballpark.
Oh, yeah.
That's a whole nother level. And Bizzano is a guy that is built from that cloth to fly through the minor leagues.
Oh, yeah.
He could be up at the end of this year, but he could break camp next year. Matt McClain's out for the year with the shoulder thing. I guarantee you next spring training, you're seeing Matt McClain in center field. Like, you will create space for Bezzotta no matter what.
Yeah, I'm really interested in that because I think that's a great point. McClain could play out there, super versatile. I remember being watching back at there, thinking back to the Cape Cod League. He was playing all over the map. You know, he's just always been able to do that. Do they try to do that with him? Or does Bezzotta end up being a guy that gets some run in center field with his wheels? I'm curious. Regardless, that's a great problem to have. And those guys, you're gonna move it around, figure it out, and just get a guy that's clearly the next best bat, and arguably, you know, 1A, 1B is the best bat in the draft. And who cares what else happens? Also, the Reds now have a nice amount of pitching. They're in a great spot to just be able to take the guy that they want to take. And I just could not imagine him. I've seen some mocks where he falls just based on how things shake out. That you never know. Things just always surprise us with the draft. But, you know, if I'm a general manager, if I'm in charge with the Reds, I would just love to don't reinvent the wheel. Don't overthink it. Take Bezzotta, and no one's ever going to criticize you because the makeup as well, as you mentioned, just the way that he can fly up, even if he doesn't reach a ceiling, no one's going to say, why did you draft Travis Bezzotta? I feel pretty confident about that.
When you say fall, you've seen places where he's fallen. Where does he fall to?
5-6.
If he falls past 4, I mean, the Oakland A's need to be investigated.
I agree. And we're going to get to them in a moment. Rockies, we have them kind of doing classic Rocky stuff here. Chase Burns, right-handed pitcher. I could see them going several different routes. Sure. I could see them going Caglione here. This is where it starts to open up for me, where I could see anything. I feel as though this is just the way the Rockies should continue to go. And you have a chance now to take the best arm in the class. Why would the Rockies pass on that? They've been trying to take an arm every opportunity they can. And that's when they don't even have a chance at the best arm. You know, with Gabriel Hughes, good prospect, wasn't the best arm in the class. They grabbed him. No one said it was a bad pick. It hasn't gone well because of the injury and whatever. But, you know, that wasn't a surefire. Like, he wasn't Chase Burns. He wasn't Chase Dolander. The opportunity to take Dolander, they couldn't pass on. Even though he was a guy that came with some concern and volatility because of the tough junior year, the Rockies didn't care because, like, how often do you get to draft a guy with that kind of upside as a pitcher? And I think it's going to be the same thing with Burns. They might get infatuated with the idea of 550-foot home runs from Caglione at altitude, and I'm infatuated by that thought too. But you have a chance now to have two of the more exciting young pitching prospects in baseball, two guys that can get up and help your big league club relatively soon. And I don't know if we could really think of a time where the Rockies have had as much exciting pitching talent as they would have if they add Burns. All of a sudden, you could start to visualize a future in Colorado where they actually have a balanced team. With Palmquist throwing the way he's throwing, Dolander is the real deal. Burns, I have no concerns about him pitching at altitude. That guy could pitch in and where they're having the Mexico series every day, and I'd still, you know, have confidence in him. I just feel like this is too good of an opportunity to pass on, even if he would have maybe slipped several more picks after this, if the Rockies don't take him. Because I think other teams would go bats. Unique spot for the Rockies. Got to do it, right?
I think so. I think you have to do it. You didn't mention Sean Sullivan either. Mm-hmm. Hughes, whatever you get from him after TJ is bonus. And not to mention, Herman Marquez feels very content staying in Colorado. You've got Kyle Freeland extended long term. Senzatella is clearly interested in staying post TJ too. So that creates a starting pitching assortment as soon as 2026 that factors in Marquez, Freeland, Senzatella, Burns, Dolander, Sullivan, Palmquist. That is the Reds conversation that we had this year, where they had 7 to 8 viable candidates to start Major League Baseball games. When was the last time we said that about the Cincinnati Reds? Long time ago. Yeah. When have we said that about the Colorado Rockies? Never. No, welcome to 2026, really. 2027, where Veen's in the fold, Yankiel's in the fold, Tovar is really becoming who he is, Amador's in the fold, Romo's in the fold, Jordan Beck, Sterling Thompson, whatever you get there. Like, man, they're set up for success very soon.
Yep. And that, I love that point too, because this is another one of those instances where, okay, you could go, I mean, I love multiple bats that they could go in this range here. But look at their organization right now. they're loaded in terms of the outfield. Bevy of bats over there. Why would you go take a Montgomery? First baseman? Yeah, Caglione's on a different level. But if you feel as though Burns is just as good of a pitcher as Caglione is as a hitter, why wouldn't you go with the arm when you've got so many corner guys, you got so many outfielders, your middle infield set? I think it's just a no-brainer in terms of if you're looking at from 2 years from now, where your roster would be if you took a Montgomery versus a Burns. I just feel like Burns is the guy that can you can really conceptualize a complete roster. And I think for that reason, this is, again, one of those trends and need base no-brainer, I think, for the Rockies, too.
Yeah.
We'll go kind of quicker as we start to get deeper into it. Number four, I have the A's taking Nick Kurtz. Kurtz is healthy, and I think that's been the big key, man. This is a name that I think could go – you could see him – he could surprise the world and go two. I mean, that wouldn't shock me at all. That could be one area where the Reds really fall in love with, like, their next Joey Votto. And scouts love Kurtz because you're getting, you know, the plus hit paired with the plus power. Bizana could be plus hit. Like, that's the crazy thing. But Kurtz, not far off. The field of hit for a guy that's that big is insane. That's what we talked about last time. And the power is really shining through now that he's healthy and that shoulder's right. If he falls to four here, I don't see him falling much further. I could see the A's going with a Braden Montgomery. That could make sense with what he's doing. I just think people are too confident, and scouts just seems to be so resounding of positive feedback on Nick Kurtz that I think he might just go right here at four. That said, Montgomery wouldn't surprise me at all, or the A's just going some unique route. We know they like to underslot sometimes too.
Yeah.
So they could go with another college bat and underslot. I just feel like with where they're at, they want a guy that can probably come up quick, continue to try to find big league pieces. Kurtz is as high floor as they come.
So can I tell you that they may stay away from Kurtz because they like what they found in Noda and they need space for Soderstrom with Langeliers catching as well as he is? Like, I don't know. All of a sudden it feels like they're set big league wise. Catcher, first base, DH. But like, you've got a guy that will be better than all of them likely in Kurtz, yeah, that you might just have to do, and then you move elsewhere. And, you know, hey, Noda was a Rule 5 guy. Like, chances are he'll be just fine being in a bench role. Nick Kurtz, everybody was really panicked at the beginning of the year, right? When he started slowly and you said it was injury related. He's OPSing better than he was his sophomore year, which is what like truly put him on the map. He had a 13-11 OPS in 56 games. Granted, we're still 22 games shy of that, but 34 games for Kurtz so far this year, he's slashing .314, .500, .822. He's slugging 40 points better than he was last year, and that's a 13-22 OPS. He's fine. He started slow. He made up for lost time. He's phenomenal. I get it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, it's ridiculous when guys you feel like aren't playing to their 100% of their ability and they're still putting up numbers like that. The swing is just so good to be able to make that kind of contact while elevating consistently and hitting the ball as hard as he does. He's a great first baseman as well, which helps. The A's could totally turn this thing on its head though and go with underslot. I mean, we saw them go Jacob Wilson. Like if JJ Weatherholt's there for a slight discount because his stock doesn't fully recover, I could totally see them going that route. And then again, Montgomery could be another option. Soderstrom's been playing really well as well. But as you mentioned, like this is just one of those instances where you're looking at a player who's just better than anybody you have at the big league spot. So if they love Kurtz, like who cares what the big league team looks like? It's a little bit different, you know, with the team that's that far off. But I'm with you. If they see somebody right there with Kurtz, then they might go, you know, with another position. Number five, how about the Chicago White Sox breaking the trend here and going high school? That seems to be the smokescreen right now. I'm calling it a smokescreen. It might be true. We know for sure that they are hot on the trail of Connor Griffin and Bryce Rainer, the two top high school pieces in this draft. Connor Griffin, shortstop, outfielder, Jackson Prep in Mississippi. 6'4", plus runner, plus power potential. the ability to play a good shortstop in center field, Jack, like this is superstar potential, but there's way more, there's more risk than any of these college bats because there is some hit tool concern and he's a high schooler. The White Sox can't pick in the top 10 next year. The White Sox need as much talent as they can get on the offensive side. And I think the upside play here is Connor Griffin. I think he has the highest upside of who would theoretically be available here. And I think the White Sox may gamble on that.
So you do it. It's hard for me personally, and I know that it's really hard for you to have a sweeping takeaway about a high school guy. Granted, you can see way more from a high school hitter than I can, but like, I just kind of take the industry's word for it on people like Max Clark and Walker Jenkins. And this is a guy that I just kind of have to take the industry's word for it, that he's the best high school hitter that we've got. And it makes sense. Like, just go grab the best available, the chance for the highest ceiling in the draft. Like, just go do that if you're the White Sox, because you need talent. Doesn't matter where, just get talent.
Could you see them go college? You know, could you see that?
I guess, like, I really do think they're just going to throw something at the dartboard and see if they hit a bullseye.
I don't disagree with that. And Colson and Montgomery going well for them, too, as a high school pick. And
yeah,
the influx of pitching talent that they've had come in now with some of these trades. I think you got to go for the highest ceiling. They may think that Rayner ultimately has the higher ceiling. And I think that they're going to be doing a lot of scouting over the next few months to determine that. But, you know, you don't even need to be, you know, tapped in, Jack, on Connor Griffin. If I just tell you 6'4 with plus speed, plus power, and great defensive ability at shortstop and in the outfield. And by the way, he's great on the mound, too. You're not going to use him on the mound, but just another testament to the freakazoid he is.
Yeah.
You can already figure out what that upside looks like if it all comes together.
Yeah. We also are not able to look at previous drafts and establish kind of a line of thinking because this is the first time that Chris Getz is going to be leading a draft. He was the farm director. That's great. A lot of that has to do with development, not identification. It was Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams' show. Now it's not. What does it look like? I don't know. Nobody knows.
Exactly. And that's going to be the fun part about it. 6, Royals, best player available. And honestly, perfect fit. They need some more outfield reinforcements. And this is a team that is going to be good now. So a player that can climb quickly, Braden Montgomery, comes right in at number 6 from Texas A&M. He's been one of the best hitters in college baseball. Switch hitter, good outfielder in a corner, 80 arm. This is just a easy I would put the pick in within 3 seconds of being on the clock. If I'm in charge in Kansas City, I don't have much other than that. Just, you have a switch hitter who's improved every single underlying metric, who's hitting the absolute crap out of the ball, doing it against better competition, and, you know, can play good outfield for an organization that's kind of the one area that they could use some more depth after whiffing on a couple picks in the past. And you know, Gavin Cross not really looking like a piece for them. Montgomery makes all the sense in the world.
Dude, he was a freako at Stanford. He was like one of my favorite players to watch in college baseball when he was at Stanford because he could hop on the hill. He looked really good on the hill. This is one of those guys. And, you know, I know that similar sentiments were echoed with Skeens at Air Force. They believed that he was a back end of the first round hitter, but he can be a number one overall type pitcher. This is Montgomery. He was like back end of the first round type pitcher, but he can be a in any other year, a number one overall type hitter. And he has proven that. He was a 1072 OPS at Stanford last year. And I was like, this guy's one of the best hitters in the country. He's hitting 370 with a 1400 OPS right now. 22 homers. What do we got going on here? Like, I knew he hit 17 last year, but 22 and 110 fewer plate appearances. He's leaned into the hitter thing, and it makes me so excited to know that this is his first year doing this full time, and he's this good in the best college conference in America. Like, the sky's the limit for him in the box.
I wouldn't be surprised if he continues to climb, just because look at him. He looks the part.
He looks like a big leaguer. Not to mention, we're talking about a guy that was high 90s on the hill and was clearly a really good athlete on the hill. He could become one of the better corner outfielders in all of baseball defensively. So you get 30 to 35 homer potential, a guy that's hitting 370 in the SEC right now, walking a ton with a 510 OBP,
and he can become one of the best defensive corner outfielders in the game, it's hard for me to think he slips past six.
I'm with you. The Guardians never cease to amaze us sometimes. What if they underslotted him at one? Like, he is that good that I could see anything happening. This is a guy that should not fall past this, and I think this is probably the floor. And to rehash the A's point, then could easily go to the A's at six. A little bit more whiff than Kurtz and, you know, some of these other guys, but I mean, just a lot more, I think, to dream on from a well-rounded perspective and giving you some defensive utility. Seven, and I think people probably, most of the feedback I got was, oh, it's too low for Jack Caglione, but the Cardinals, right, that's who we have taking Jack Caglione at seven. My reasoning is this. I think this is close to the floor for him too, but look at the names that we just talked about. We were glowing about each of those guys who have really sound offensive profiles. People are going to say, oh, but Caglione can do both. And, you know, the two-way allure is really fascinating. Sure. But Caglione, the hitter, similar to the point that you just brought up, Caglione, the hitter, could be is a top 10 pick, maybe even a little bit better if he continued to do this. And, you know, we continue to have a large sample of what he's doing at the plate, which is cutting down on the strikeouts, hitting home runs every single day. Caglione, the pitcher, I see a back end of the rotation guy at best, likely a reliever, below average command, decent fast, like a good fastball up to the, you know, mid 90s, but his shape's fine, good changeup. I just, if I'm drafting Caglione, I'm doing it under the assumption that he's a hitter. Because if you're doing it under the assumption that, oh, yeah, he's going to become a middle rotation arm and the hitter, you're setting yourself up for failure there. And, you know, the second that he is no longer a pitcher, if that's my assessment there, or at least is just not a very valuable pitcher, you are already probably kicking yourself for not taking, you know, a Nick Kurtz if he was available, or a Braden Montgomery potentially. May somebody like Caglione's bat more. But remember, he's going to be playing first base. He chases at a 40% clip. And, you know, there's going to be some questions that come with that. I just don't think the pitching makes or breaks anything for me, other than the fact that it just shows how incredibly athletic and talented he is, which is great. Maybe he can go play a corner outfield spot. Caglione's power can make him, you know, drafted anywhere. Another guy that wouldn't surprise me one way or another. But when you look at the ridiculous chase rates and just, I think some things that could result in some more challenges against professional competition, I think he just comes with a little bit more risk. That said, he could hit 45, 50 home runs if it all comes together. I just think you got to look at him as a first baseman if you're really looking to draft this guy. I also think that, you know, people are going to look at the strikeout rate and maybe underestimate the risk that still is kind of baked in here with a big guy who will definitely come with some whiff.
Yeah, but I do want to stick on that for a moment. Said what, 40% chase rate?
Yeah.
He's punching out 7% of the time this year. Mm-hmm. After he punched out, what, 58 divided by 319 is 18% last year. So he's cut it in more than half. So why is he not punching out?
His field of hits a lot better. And I honestly, I think the chase at points last year was even worse. So that's the other side. Like, he was chasing mid-40s. Last year, right. I think over the last few weeks, he's cut it probably just below 40. I think it's a combination of the field to hit. The contact rates are definitely up, chase rate marginally down, and just kind of understanding how people are going to pitch to him. I think it's just a little bit of everything. The one thing that has stood out to me is he's handling velocity a lot more. Sometimes he was getting a little long to the ball. He's a big dude. We saw that in the College World Series. There was a little bit of that length, and he was getting overpowered by that lively stuff. He's a lot quicker, a lot simpler. And I think that's helped him. I my only concern is professional breaking balls. How are you going to adjust to those? And are you going to be able to lay off of those? Those are two things that you have to monitor. But you could say that about other guys too. And ultimately, Caglione maybe goes earlier than this. It's probably as low as I've seen him go is ours. But I just think teams may start to sour on the pitching a little bit more. And there might just be some yellow flags in the draft models. There's also some monster power. But if you get like 90th percentile EV, things like that, it's not like Kurtz is too far off. And I think there's some well-roundedness to Kurtz's offensive profile.
So you separate the hitter profile and the pitcher profile. Pitcher profile has immense reliever risk. If somebody was taking Jack Caglione as a pitcher, you're going to try him, but you assume the risk of bullpen arm.
Yeah.
So
and the upside's just kind of eh. Like, you know, what really are you doing? The guy that's
going to walk the world and like you hope turns into a Kmart Snell, right?
Ish. Yeah. Even then, like I just don't see that much. I don't see the stuff being good enough to be a middle rotation arm.
Do you think he could be that guy that plays first base for eight and pitches the ninth? Do you think that's like what if they wanted to do that? Maybe draft?
You say that guy, but that guy doesn't even really exist yet.
It doesn't exist. I remember 1.0, we called him a Kyle Schwarber, Gregory Soto hybrid.
Yeah, but that's like kind of what it is. I think the field of hits better for sure. And then the chase is high. So it's just a roll of the dice a little bit more than other guys. And that's, that you could pay out really well, given that he hits the ball 500 feet. It's risky. It's definitely risky. I just don't think that the arm matters too much to me. But the bat obviously can be really, really special ultimately. And a team may want to take that chance. I could also see the A's doing it. Why not? Because of what he could possibly do. Maybe the White Sox, we're talking about shooting for the sky, you know, shooting for the stars.
You'll sell merch. That could
be the way to do it.
Yeah.
We'll try to fly through these a little bit more and like kind of just say, hey, don't have much on this guy. We'll go to the next one. Angels, JJ Weatherholt. This is an interesting spot. I want to go a little bit longer on Weatherholt and then we'll fly. He fits the bill of kind of what the Angels want. Is Weatherholt's going to fly through the minor leagues if he's healthy. And that's really what it's all about. We had him 1-1 in the 1.0 mock going into the year because, I mean, when you saw what he did last year, it was Bizana, but with, I think, more power and explosiveness. And then Bizana's now added that bat speed and power and explosiveness. And now, you know, looks so, like a lot like what we were loving about Weatherholt last year. Weatherholt looks like he's back now and has been putting up good numbers and settling back in. But it's not just the injury and the fact that he hasn't been available. It's the fact that it's another injury and it's starting to create a trend here. And I think that's going to be a concern and something that may be a little bit of a turnoff for some teams. But at eight, you're getting a guy that has some of the best bat speed in the country, crazy track record for hitting, phenomenal field to hit that could be plus plus. I think it's right there with Bizana and they're kind of in their own department there. He's played shortstop. I don't really expect that to continue, especially with the recurring hamstring issues, but could play second and I could see a middle infield of him and Zach Neto. That would be really fun. But most importantly, again, Angels love guys that can fly up the ranks. Weatherholt, couldn't you just see him being the first guy to debut out of this class, even though he's not the best because the Angels drafted him? And I honestly think he could handle it pretty well relative to most.
Yeah. I mean, it's better and like more ready than Shotwell because Shotwell was playing in what conference is that? That's not the SoCon. What's FAU in?
Conference USA.
Conference USA. Yeah, but they recently moved to the American or something. Like yeah. They moved to something a little bit better. But yeah, like that's Conference USA to the big leagues. This is the Big 12 to the big leagues, and yeah. That is an easier thing to handle. So yeah, I mean, why not? Right? They grabbed Neto from a mid-major, granted a good mid-major, but a mid-major. They grabbed Shotwell from a mid-major, try the high major thing, and a guy that like has serious 1-1 level pedigree coming into this year.
100%. And it just seems like the easiest pick for the Angels to make. Sometimes yeah. It's just the layup for them.
Yeah.
Nine, the Pirates are in an interesting spot because the Pirates have so much pitching. And I think this is kind of a best player available. And you know, you could say Hagen Smith is the best player available here. And I know so a lot of people have Hagen Smith going a little bit earlier. This is just another instance where I think the Pirates can play the upside side of things. And they could definitely lean into, oh, we had Rainer higher on our big board because of the upside. I think Bryce Rainer makes all the sense in the world. Harvard Westlake kid, plenty of pedigree coming out of there in California, but legit prospect both ways too. They might give him a chance to do that. I don't know. It's a little bit easier to be patient with the high school guys. They gave Bubba Chandler a little bit of run with it, but Rainer has a chance to stick it short. I really like the swing and where it's, how far it's come. He's added some more power. The arm is massive, obviously, since he's big on the mound and I think he could be a really good defensive shortstop. If you're in a spot like the Pirates are and you're picking at nine and you can get a guy that's arguably the best prepster in the class, I think they'd be thrilled for a guy like Bryce Rainer to fall to them because again, you're not really looking at like reinforcements and do we need an arm like Hagan Smith that can get up quick, blah, blah, blah. Take the best player. I think Bryce Rainer is the best player available here and the highest upside.
There's one hole in the Pirates organization when you factor in major league talent and then who's coming down the pipe from the farm system, and it's first base. And if you're not in a position to grab Caglione or Kurtz, then like, what are we doing here? Just grab the best guy that's on the board and you feel like this is the best guy on the board.
And I mean, just from a pure upside perspective, if he's cut from a similar cloth to Connor Griffin, like, go for it. And I think the Pirates would be thrilled with that.
Yeah.
The Nationals would be thrilled to get Hagan Smith at number 10. We're going to talk about that in a moment. Before that, a quick break.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So Smith has been putting up crazy numbers for Arkansas. Left-handed pitching prospect that the fastball slider combination, guaranteed big league bullpen piece for sure. At the very least, you can guarantee that. I have a little bit of a question of the third pitch. May not need it too badly because of how good the fastball and the slider are. And yeah, how he can just fill up the zone with it up to the upper 90s and just blow hitters away. But you know, you'd like to see a little bit more of a change up there and a little bit more pitchability. Teams are going to love him though. And he's clearly just in that tier one with Chase Burns kind of in. Yesevich has done a good job of closing in the gap, but I think teams seem to have Burns, Smith, 1-2. For the Nationals, another one of those where you could probably make the case it's the best player available, but also fits like a glove, can fast track for them and instantly becomes, you know, their best pitching prospect. It's just a great get for them. I think they'd be thrilled to have him fall to 10.
And they need pitching, man. Like, you know, we talk about being excited by the Nats, you know, and their farm system. It's really all hitters. Like, is there a pitcher that we're super, super amped about?
Mitchell Parker.
Okay. Yeah, I like him.
A healthy Cade Cavalli. Like,
sure, but he's already 25, 26. Like,
Harlan Susana.
No. So,
point stands.
If you can add a guy that, you know, can survive and maybe even thrive in the major leagues as a two pitch arm, go ahead and do it.
I agree. 11, Cam Smith to the Tigers, Florida State third baseman. He is an interesting story because just kind of a rough freshman year and then goes to the Cape Cod League, tears it up, wins best pro prospect there. And then this draft eligible sophomore year has just been insane. And looks like he's figured things out. The approach for Scott Harris seems to be hit tool guys. And Smith was a little bit more of a power over hit guy in the beginning, but he has made so much progress with the field of hit and looks like just a well-rounded offensive piece here that I think the Tigers would be thrilled to get a guy like Cam Smith at 11. Another team that just, I think they're just going to want to add bats. And they've went, you know, bat heavy the last couple of years. So I could see them going any which way. But I think with the helium that Cam Smith has had, this is more of a where I think the draft's going to be by the time it comes around and where I think Cam Smith is going to be by the time the draft comes around, which is a borderline top 10 pick.
Is this a 55s across the board guy?
He kind of screams it.
Yeah. Like,
and electric. He hits bombs and I love the emotion and energy. He's got that moxie that you want out of your first round pick.
He hits bombs, but is it 60 grade power? Maybe.
I think it ultimately will be. A lot of evaluators believe that he hasn't even finished tapping into all of his power.
Okay. Gotcha.
So it's kind of an upside play too, as a guy that has had things really click in his sophomore season and is 6'3", 230. So, and moves really well and can stick at third. So there's a lot to like there. That was one of my favorite video dives. Look at that. He's doing like the Manny Ramirez when he hits the home run there. It's just awesome. 12, Boston Red Sox, Trey Yesevich. He is really, we talk about the two guys at the top and Burns and Smith. Yesovich has basically made himself clearly the third best pitcher in the draft. I think that's undeniable with what he's done at East Carolina. East Carolina's become a little bit of a factory there. Red Sox, I feel like with who they've got now, with Bailey involved, with Breslow involved, with Bodie involved, that's why, of course, they're going to somehow go with the bat here. But it just seems like it just seems perfect for them to go arm, especially if Yesovich is there. I think he could climb as quickly as any of these arms. Three pitches for a strike, pound in the zone, mid-90s fastball. He's just a very well-rounded arm.
From a sheer numbers perspective at East Carolina, it's very Gavin Williams. Mm-hmm. Like, always on the hill, striking out a ton, not really walking anybody, not allowing balls to leave the ballpark. Like, he did last year, 11 homers in, 76 innings? Two homers in 61 innings now.
Yeah, I mean, that'll play. The pitchability is improved, to your point, and mixing three pitches just whenever he wants for a strike, and the fastball now, it's not like the stuff isn't good. The stuff is good. Splitter, slider, and the fastball now getting up to 97. It's just a high probability middle rotation arm, in my opinion. And the Red Sox probably feel good about being able to continue to develop a guy like that.
Yeah.
13, San Francisco Giants go Seaver King. I thought this was just a good fit because Seaver King's upside, when you get to this range, is up there with anybody. Shortstop, he's played outfield, he's played third. He's played all over for Wake Forest. He's a plus runner with a big arm and just a phenomenal athlete. I have some concerns about pitch recognition, chase. There might be some swing and miss, but he hits the ball really hard. And the Giants seem to be okay with those. Like, they are very risk tolerant when it comes to some of these profiles. And I think this is a player that, even when you look at 13, it could just be a really fun upside play that also is settling in the second half and has been a lot better as he gets more acclimated to ACC competition.
Cool.
14, Cam Caminiti, nephew of Ken, left-hander reclassified into the 2024 class. Where do you feel like, what's your gut feeling on the Cubs here? Because I could see the Cubs going any which way. And I feel like taking, this is clearly to me the highest upside high school arm and arguably the highest upside arm just period that would be available at this point forward.
Yeah.
A lefty who's going to be 17 years old on draft day with, you know, bloodlines and funky delivery, but loud stuff, and has gotten better every time you check in. Seems like a fun fit. And by the way, in their backyard, they've got scouts all over there in Scottsdale and in that greater area. So they're getting plenty of looks. This is just kind of a gut pick for me.
Yeah. I mean, if any of those three college arms that we've gone over are on the board, and Burns won't be on the board, Smith won't be on the board. If Yesovich is on the board, the Cubs do that. But like, if not, you just go best arm available. And, you know, that's high school kid here.
And I don't think Yesovich will be available. He might not even be there for the Red Sox, to be honest.
So there we go. Like, if any of those three, but like, you know, college arm four is who at this point? Brecht, Santucci. We'll get to those guys in a minute. But like,
yeah,
I don't want to touch those guys. I'd rather just roll the dice on a high school arm.
It's a totally different tier. I'm with you. Yeah. I'd rather roll the dice on the 17-year-old high school arm. 15, Seattle Mariners go with one of my favorite guys in the draft. It's like Jet Williams 2.0, Slade Caldwell. 5'6", speedy, good feel to hit, sneaky pop. The Mariners just nail their high school picks, and it just seems like he's cut from that cloth for them. And it seems like just such a Seattle Mariners selection here. I also think he's going to have a lot of helium and be a guy that ends up settling in right around the middle of the first round. And I don't know if the Mariners are going to pass up on the opportunity to take a guy that such a high floor for a high school piece, but also has more impact than you'd expect from a guy of that size, plays the game at 100 miles an hour, and it's just a really fun player.
They'll just start stockpiling, man. You got J-Rod up there for the next 15 years, and then you've got Clase that just made his way up there, and then Farmello and Slade Caldwell is going to be a very fun, you know, outfield trio. And then, hey, man, like, we'll see what happens with Harry Ford. He's still catching full time right now, but, you know, he could add into that fold too.
And I could see them going with an arm. Wouldn't surprise me, but it just doesn't seem like to be the way the Mariners have kind of operated over the last few years. And they've had a lot of success with these types of high school players. And this is where I expect Caldwell to go. Yeah. 16, Miami Marlins, Caleb Bonnemer. The Marlins need a bat, and to get a shortstop high school kid out of, is it Michigan?
Yeah.
I mean, they could go a few different ways, but I think Bonnemer, high probability of sticking it short, above average offensive potential. Either you can dream on above average power, pretty advanced field to hit for a high schooler, especially for a cold weather kid. Bendix has not strayed in the past. And also, we've seen the Marlins new kind of basically the other person that's going to be in charge of Marlins drafting as well, who was previously with the Mariners. They have not strayed from cold weather kids. I think they kind of feel like they can find a niche there of under scouted, overlooked players. And Bonnemer kind of fits that bill. Bendix has had no hesitancy to like go towards those high school shortstops and just high school guys in general. And I think now with bringing in a guy from the Mariners that kind of had that similar approach to cold weather, high school kids, things like that, just seems like a fit. And also the Marlins need a shortstop in the worst way, and he can stick there.
Yeah. I mean, Xavier Isaac and Colson Carson Williams were two guys in Tampa that were taken, and they were like, who? Like that's kind of a, you know, reach of a pick, but guess what? They're both well inside the top 50.
Yep. Brewers, not much to add to this other than, you know, Theodore Gillen, Texas kid, infielder, outfielder, just a lot of helium. This is a guy that has maybe as much helium as anybody in the class right now, just because of the data, the batted ball data, ton of contact, projectable at 6'3", 200. He may not stick it short, but the fact that he can play in other spots, he's a plus runner, just seems to be a guy that is flying up draft boards, and this seems like the range where he could go and might be the best player available for the Brewers. 18, Rays go Vance Honeycutt. Honeycutt's got to be one of the more difficult guys to peg in this class because it's elite defensive ability in center field. It's plus power. And the numbers are better this year. He's been better offensively, but there's a lot of still underlying yellow flags. I think the whiff rates when we talk about draft models would be, you know, up there with just about any, like right at the edge or beyond where teams are like willing to pallet. But at the same time, you kind of move the goalpost when you have a guy that is phenomenal defensively and, you know, not even phenomenal, gold glove caliber defensively with the speed and power potential. It just feels like such a Rays pick, a Rays team that seems to love these types of players where they other teams give up on them and they snag them up. You think of Jose Siri. Honeycutt is similar to Jose Siri in some ways, but I think obviously it could be better. And it just seems like the risk tolerant Rays would be thrilled for a player with as much upside as Honeycutt to fall to them at 18. And they have not been put off by hit tool questions in the past. You mentioned some of the guys like Carson Williams and Xavier Isaac. Greg Jones, another super toolsy high school guy that they were not put off by the swing and miss concerns. Like we've seen them be that way consistently. They're not too worried about it. And I think they're going to stick to those guns. And Honeycutt, you know, could be a guy that ends up rewarding them big time if it all comes together.
We've got an 154 game sample at this point to work with in his college career. So 154, you can pretty much just call that a full season. And this guy, I know it's ACC competition, it's not pro pitching, but a 415 OBP, 53 homers, 70 stolen bases. Has he struck out 196 times? Yes. But has he walked 115? Also, yes. You're signing up for volatility, but you could be signing up for a very, very high ceiling.
You're not going to find a higher ceiling outside of the top 15 picks than Vance Honeycutt. And the Rays, I think they see everything as a freaking math equation sometimes. And I think the upside in this investment is too good to pass on, I think, for the Tampa Bay Rays. Yeah. Mets, Carson Bench, outfielder, Oklahoma State, also can run up to 96 on the mound. Just think it's a good fit for them. Also a guy that I think had some helium, and this is around the range where I see him going and just fits the bill of what the Mets could be looking for and what they've kind of been looking for over the last couple of years, just in terms of trades and in the draft. Bench is a guy that I think is going to continue to climb a little bit. Needs some tweaks with the swing mechanics, but is a good get there, and I think should go around this range. 20, the Blue Jays catcher, Caleb Lomavita. This was a Pete Flaherty-inspired selection, not specifically to the Blue Jays, but Pete Flaherty, who's even mentioned in the tweet here, does amazing stuff for Baseball America. Pete told me Lomavita, slam dunk, first-round pick. He definitely thinks that he's going to be a guy that goes in the first round. Very aggressive hitter. And that's going to be something that I think could make some teams concerned. But you have a catcher that can do it from both sides, where he's a really good defender, good receiver, or at least decent receiver, plus arm, and then he can provide plenty of thump and a pretty good field of hit. So it's just, can he cut down on the chase? I think some teams may see Loma Vita as a top 15 pick. And if the Blue Jays are one of them, I don't think he falls past them at 20.
Is this a weak catching class?
It might be. And kind of just thinking about, like, Loma Vita is supposed to be arguably the top guy here. I know there's some other catchers that people really like, and it kind of becomes a clump. But I do think it is, because Loma Vita comes with plenty of flags, and he might be the first guy off the board at the position.
Yeah.
So it's just, that's part of the reason too why I think he could end up floating up a little bit higher. Another guy that I think is going to float up higher is Will Schmidt. He might not be here at 21 for the Twins. A right-hander that is probably the best right-handed prepster in the class. And you think about the best right-handed prepster, sometimes teams will reach a little bit further for a guy like that out of Louisiana. But if he's there, it seems like a perfect pick for the Twins, who typically like to go with the pitching, unless they have a guy like Walker Jenkins, you know, fall right into their lap, or Brooks Lee fall right into their lap. But I mean, it's a fastball that's up to 96 with great characteristics, and a sharp curveball that's over 3000 RPM, kind of that data darling. They love Chase Petty because of the data darling aspect. I think Will Schmidt kind of fits the bill too.
Got you.
Orioles. They could go any direction, man. But in this instance, I have them going with Kellen Lindsay, shortstop from Hardy High School in Florida. He's the fastest guy in the draft. So I think with the Orioles, like, just go with the freak at this point. Mm-hmm. And they go with the guy here, I think, that sticks at shortstop, good defense. It's a raw swing, and he's been a guy with helium as well, but arguably the best athlete, the best runner in the class. And there's a lot of upside to dream on offensively. And the Orioles have been really good at being able to unlock those types. We talked about the Bradfield pick last year. Feels like a fit for the O's.
Gotcha.
23, Los Angeles Dodgers, Brody Brecht. Don't you just feel like this is a fit of all fits?
Yeah.
Right-hander from Iowa. Command has been all over the place. Been better lately. Huge, huge piece in terms of what he can be. Stuff is nuts. Dodgers have always been risk tolerant with command. Does it not feel like a fit?
This, you know what this feels like? This feels like the meme of, you know, the girl taking on the bad boy saying, "I can fix him." Like, that's totally what this feels like. And hey, if there's any organization in baseball that can quote unquote fix Brody Brecht, it's this organization, and they're going to baby the living crap out of him. Again, I watched the Dodgers in high A and in double A baby the crap out of Landon Knack and Clayton Beater and Bobby Miller, and they were throwing an inning and two thirds every fourth day. That's what they're going to do with Brecht, and they're going to say, "Hey, you're not going longer until you figure out how to throw strikes," and he's going to figure out how to throw strikes. It's really frustrating that he hasn't figured out how to throw strikes at this point, but
I know
he's punching out the world. I get it. The stuff is as good as anybody in college baseball right now.
And look, I don't know if it's all going to work out, but they were fine with Maddox Bruns. Yeah, they go out and trade for Jackson Ferris. They don't care if you don't.
They took on, they assumed the risk of Ronan Kopp too. Like, there's a bunch of guys that they're just figuring out.
And I think they're going to keep doing it because you play the percentages. One of them clicks. He's a star. And, yeah, you know, the others, maybe relievers at best. You might not have as high of a hit rate, but when you hit, you got a potential frontline guy.
Yeah.
24, Braves, Jonathan Santucci. They go pitcher every year, man.
And yeah,
if they have an opportunity to get the left-hander from Duke here at 24, why wouldn't you? I think this is just one of those where if he falls to them, it's just a layup for them. You can climb quickly if this command slump that we've seen from the last handful of starts doesn't continue. But it's a good fastball, good slider, and a changeup that's flashed as well. The Braves always go with an arm. And if they have a chance to get one of the better college arms, and I think arguably the best tier two arm, you know, if you kind of put Yesevich in the tier one with those guys, I think it's just a perfect fit.
Is it fair to say outside of the big three, outside of the tier one, Santucci has the highest floor of any arm in the draft?
I think so. I think that's absolutely fair.
Yeah.
25, Carter Johnson, one of my favorite swings in the draft. Shortstop, prepster, goes to the Padres. One of my favorite swings, high school kid, Padres just seems to be a fit. Every time I love a swing, the Padres take him. So that's part of it for me. Not much else beyond that. I think he's going to continue to enjoy some helium as the draft gets closer. But I just think this is kind of around the range where he could go. And I'm going to stick with the trend of I like a swing and the Padres take that guy. So I think that's where it goes again here.
Cool.
26, Dakota Jordan, one of the more polarizing prospects in the draft. Some think that he could go way higher than this, than 26 to the Yankees. Others think that, you know, this would be a very risky pick. It's some of the best raw power in the entire class. We're talking EVs like off the charts. He's a plus runner, but the speed doesn't have much utility because he's not a great defender and he doesn't steal bags. The Yankees have been pretty tolerant to whiff, especially late in the first, and love the tools and the upside and things like that. And I think it's a pick that could make a lot of sense. I wouldn't do it. It's just where I seem to understand where it's expected that Dakota Jordan goes is somewhere around this range. I could see him more as a second round guy, but I think teams may not want to pass on the unteachable bat speed and a guy that is as good of an athlete as he is with that kind of power.
He was going to be an SEC wide receiver. He was going to play wide receiver in an air raid offense for the late, great Mike Leach. So this guy is clearly a really good athlete if you're going to be an air raid wide receiver, unlike Brody Brecht, who is going to play wide receiver in the Iowa offense, which is the most underutilized person. Yeah, but like, does he have a catch? I don't think he had a catch in game because nobody has catches in game for the University of Iowa.
I think he had like 11, which means he must have been their number one.
No way he had 11.
I think at one point he had 11. He must have been their number one.
Tell me about Cash Mayfield, and I'll tell you if Brody Brecht caught a pass in college.
I want to say he had 11 receptions one season.
Okay.
Cash Mayfield, I actually think, is a really interesting lefty. Phillies, when they like a prepster, they grab him. 6'4", southpaw, crossfire delivery. I love his mechanics. I think they're smooth and repeatable. He won the Oklahoma Gatorade Player of the Year in 2023. 109 punches and 16 walks, by the way. I just love the pitchability. I love the mechanics. And I think that there's even more room for velocity in there. Feel for three pitches already. I think Mayfield is going to end up being a late first round option.
9 catches for 87 yards for Brody Brecht. He didn't have 11.
That's got to lead the team, right?
I'm sure that was top 7.
That's funny, though. That's good stuff. 28 Astros. They could go any route. Ryan Sloan's a name that I keep hearing more and more about. Illinois kid. And you've been talking about, Jack, the Illinois talent. And this is a kid that's throwing fuzz. He's been up to the upper 90s, good slider, changeup. It's just the classic power prep righty. How does it look when he comes to professional baseball? We'll see, but that's why he's a late first round pick. Wake Forest commit may be hard to sign, but I also love any arm that's committed to Wake Forest. So it's a good spot to be able to snag a good upside arm here by the Astros at 28.
He's a big filled out kid. I've seen all his stuff pop up on like PBR Illinois. Like
he's a big boy.
Yeah, he's a big boy that is like filled out, and he's got very sound mechanics for being a filled out big boy at 18 years old.
29, Kalen Culpepper. Nothing jumps off the page with this guy. It's a classic kind of 50s across the board, 50s to 55s across the board. Yeah. But a lot of people love him. Just the way he plays, his swing, what he's been able to do at Kansas State as a shortstop. I think the D-backs, they see an opportunity here to just – they've been a little bit more college heavy of late, and I think there's an opportunity that where he might just be the best player available for them. I think some people have a middle first round grade on Culpepper, some maybe even a little bit higher. So if he does slide to this spot, I think it's just kind of a best player available approach for the D-backs here. I could see them going with pitching and going with one of the prepsters here. And you know, there's plenty of them that you could kind of pick from. But I think at this point, Culpepper is the better player on the board and a high probability big leaguer. I know they kind of went Tommy Troy before, you know, last year, and it's similar. But I think Culpepper, again, you're just taking the best player available there.
Got you.
Last but not least, Texas Rangers could go any route. We have them going Tommy White, third base / first base, probably first base out of LSU. To me, I felt like they could just go with the upside play here. And the upside is that Tommy White can hit you 30 plus bombs and actually has a good feel to hit. It's just the fact that his approach is not there. And there's a lot of movement to the swing, loud barrel tip. I just think it's really hard to sync that all up. We were talking about that, you know, before the season, and why I felt like he had a little bit too much prospect stock at the at that point, and we've seen him slip a little bit. I will be honest though, I did not expect him to struggle as much, and it's relative, of course, not struggling, but relative to what he's done. You know, I was not expecting him to slip this much offensively. I mean, the batting average has dropped like 50 points almost. He has what, 13 home runs through his first 40 something games. He was, you know, Tommy tanks for a reason in his first 2 years. So the power just has not been in there for him as consistently. And I think a lot of it's because of the moving parts and his timing being inconsistent, but you can't teach that bat speed. And there's definitely a feel for the barrel that's surprising for a guy that is as violent with the swing as he is. And I think a Rangers team at 30 may just be intrigued with that and, you know, want to play that upside.
Can I call my shot? Switch pitcher, Gerangelo, I think Cincha. Mm-hmm. Goes in the first round. Somebody's going to do it at the end of the first round. Somebody's going to do it.
Maybe the Rangers.
Why not?
I have no idea what they're going to do. I think they could go any which way, but I also wouldn't be surprised if Tommy White continues to fall. So they may go with Gerangelo here and who knows. It's been fun seeing him start to get some more hype.
He's a draft eligible sophomore, man.
That would be fun. I would love to see what a two-handed, I guess not everyone has two hands, but most pitchers of all time. Ambidextrous pitcher would look like.
It'd be a lot of fun. Smash the
Vendetti or whatever. Vendetti. Was it Pat Vendetti?
Pat Vendetti. He stunk.
It doesn't count. It's like, it's just not good from either arm. Like,
right.
It doesn't count. But that does it for this mock draft. We will definitely do another one in a month. And we're also going to probably do like a top draft prospects thing. And at some point as the draft gets closer, of course, we want to make sure that we get all these team top prospect lists out. We just did the Tigers. If you missed that, go check that out. We're also going to be doing top 100 or just a prospect mailbag for subscribers. So if you didn't get your questions answered on the last regular call-up mailbag, you can subscribe to the bonus episodes linked in the episode description and get your questions in there where you're guaranteed to get those answered on these subscription-based call-up episodes. Jack, any final thoughts on this draft class?
I don't think so. I love it. I love the top 10. Like, my thing that I aim to do every single year is whenever there is a top 10 caliber arm or bat that is on an accessible feed, so like ESPN Plus or maybe even linear television and ACC Network and SEC Network, I will make sure to watch them. And I've had more fun watching the top 10 in this crop than I have in any of the, you know, I guess 2-3 previous years that we've been doing the Just Baseball show. But I think since I really started doing that, which was probably sophomore, junior year of high school in 2015.
I think that's anecdotal, but it's also, I think, factual in the fact that baseball, college baseball, is in a really good spot.
Way better than
it's ever been. And it's as talented as it's ever been. Look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I sit down and watch all 3 hours of sometimes four or five hours of a college baseball game.
Dude, most of the time it's 4 or 5 hours. College baseball is just brutal to watch.
It's brutal. I won't lie. I'm not going to pretend I sit down and do that. But if on Friday night on the ESPN Plus app or whatever, I am absolutely hopping around and I'm tuned in and I'm really enjoying the talent that's there and the passion that's there as well. And I think, you know, you all, if you haven't watched much college baseball, would enjoy, especially with some of these top dogs on the mound. And as we get to the postseason, I think you'll really enjoy that. Hope you have a great weekend. As always, thank you for listening. We'll talk prospects with you on Monday.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.